Welcome to another edition of Under Review. The Canes-Rangers Game 1 lived up to expectations as the intensity picks up as the second round begins. The Rangers strike first with a 4-3 win, and we'll break it all down next.
We're going to go!
Well, let's see. We're going to get the call here.
We're getting the right call. That's all that matters.
After review, good call.
Good goal.
After reviewing the play, the call on the ice stands. We got a goal!
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a playoff edition of Under Review. I'm Jeff Filippi, along with Stat Boy Steven and Jack Filippi, as we record this hot off the Rangers 4-3 victory in game one. And guys, I think I'll just start with this saying there wasn't a lot of surprise in this game as how the game kind of in its entirety played out, meaning Carolina swarmed, Carolina tried to be impactful 5-on-5. The Rangers power play was lethal. The Rangers managed the game well, even though Carolina controlled the puck more. Igor was good enough. It felt like this is the way the Rangers would win the series, right, Steven?
Yeah, look, this game was very complete by the Rangers, a very mature way they played it. Of course, it helps that you get off with that off the mark with that first goal early. Then Carolina got back one goal. It was 1-1 after 4 minutes, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But the Rangers just kept playing the same way, and this is where coaching makes a difference.
And absolutely.
The Rangers had a really good approach for this Carolina Hurricanes team, and they executed perfectly. Yeah, they were under pressure in the second period because they were up 3-1, and Carolina being down two goals, they're going to put the pressure on you. They're going to, mm-hmm. you know, play a little bit more physical. They're going to try to get you off your game. But no, the Rangers played really solid in their own zone. There were maybe one or two sequences where they failed to clear the puck, and it led to some offensive zone pressure by them. But now overall, over 60 minutes, I never really felt that the Rangers were not winning this.
Yeah, which is an odd feeling to have as a Ranger fan in a playoff game, right, Jack?
Absolutely, yes. But you know what? I think they showed us a little something now in this game one, and they showed us a little something in those first four games against the Capitals to think maybe it is a little different, and this team is a little different with the combination of the maturity of this core, the maturity of the role players, and now, you know, the leadership of the coaching staff and the guidance they're bringing. Oof, it's only game one, and it's just to think about it. You got to win 16 games to win the Stanley Cup, and they've only won 5.
No, what? That's why, again, it's
like
impossible
they still have
to win the
11 more wins to go.
I every year I say this, I don't imagine how anybody wins the cup because it seems impossible to win the cup.
It does seem impossible.
And this team is playing with an edge, which everybody up and down the lineup.
Absolutely, yeah. You took the words out of my mouth. I think this is the most aggressive physical game I've seen this core play. The way they went after Carolina is what it was been like for this team, this organization, over almost its existence, where they're the team that gets where the other team is trying to assert their will on the Rangers. They're trying to dominate the Rangers.
Yes.
The Rangers physically asserted their will on Carolina from puck drop. They were on them immediately. Everybody was physical. Everybody was physical. Artemi was laying hits. Kako and Laf were laying hits. The whole group united in a physical, aggressive, persistent effort against Carolina. And just to think about how complete an effort this was, you know, as the game went on, hockey broke out and Carolina got their chances. But from early on, they were right on their game. Their breakouts were perfect. But like, even Kako and Love were throwing themselves in front of shots from the point to block shots. Like, that was so awesome. Seeing
lottery picks mentality
play a full game, throwing themselves in front of shots, like, what else can you ask for?
Yes, exactly. You know, and Steven, one thing, though he wasn't the centerpiece today, is Igor now is in a streak where he's played 28 straight playoff games, allowing three goals or fewer. And the last game he let up a fourth goal was actually two games almost, because it was a triple overtime game, was the fourth goal in that game one against Pittsburgh in 2022. So he remains steady. He remains important, especially the way Carolina wants to swarm and build goals in the offensive zone.
Yeah, NHL PR actually tweeted this earlier today, and it came true because the Rangers won. Igor is now the third Rangers goaltender ever to record a win in the team's first five games of a postseason, joining Mike Richter in 94, who had seven, and Dave Kerr in 1937, who had five.
And two things about those years, Stephen: in 94, they won the cup. In 37, they lost in the final.
Yeah.
So there you go. Now, one quick thing I just wanted to mention about the Rangers, which I didn't even realize until recently, when they won their cups in 28 and 33 and 40, the Rangers never won a Stanley Cup in the six-team NHL. Because when they won their three cups, there was either 7, 8, 9, or 10 teams in the league. Yeah. It wasn't until 42-43 that it became a six-team league.
I think 1940, the last time they won, the Brooklyn
the New York Americans. They became Brooklyn the next year, and then by the year after that, or 2 years after that, it became six teams.
The New York Americans were still in the league. It was a seven-team league at the time.
But it's interesting to go back on how many years there was actually 10 teams in the NHL in that era. There was a lot of years where it was a 10-team NHL.
The Pittsburgh Pirates, the Philadelphia Quakers, the St. Louis Eagles, I think.
Yeah,
the
there was a weird
name that
Detroit.
You never hear again. The old Ottawa Senators that actually
the
won
old
a
Ottawa
Cup.
Senators, the original. Exactly. The original Ottawa Senators, exactly.
But to get us back on track.
Getting back to this.
That was an awesome game.
They beat
up Carolina. Their breakouts were perfect through the first two periods. As I said earlier, as the game went on, a hockey game broke out, and it wasn't exactly as organized as it was to start the game. But the Rangers, man, they looked ready for everything Carolina They looked ready for everything Carolina was going to throw at them and did throw at them. That power play, knowing exactly how Carolina would pressure them, over-pressure them, which would then open up the space for the Rangers to have the advantage below the dots, and then Trocheck to Kreider, Kreider to Mika in a wide-open net. That was written up perfectly, executed perfectly. During practice, I'm sure Dan Muse, I'm sure, was hyper fixating on exactly where their stick positionings would be and where their body positioning would be and where the defenders would be, and they executed it perfectly. I couldn't imagine what Carolina's thinking right now, because it looked like imagine going from a Gerard Gallant New York Rangers team, which is, you know, go out there and skate, just beat you on pure skill and fortunate bounces, and then this team, 2 years later, with the same players playing better, and now they are playing a system to the T.
And Steven, so the first power play goal was the set play. The second power play goal was the Rangers baiting Burns to play aggressively on the man-on-man, which created a mismatch down low, and the Rangers were able to get the puck across to Mika for that second goal. So the Rangers really were... It felt like they were one step ahead of Carolina when they were on the power play.
Yeah, and look, aside from the fact that these goals came on the power play or even strength, I think the one thing all the goals have in common tonight is that they were the result of a play that the Rangers drew up. They were not the result of a deflection. They were not the result of a bounce that went away.
Broken play.
No broken plays. No. The first goal, Roslovic skates behind the net and beautifully passes it to Zibanejad because everybody thinks he's going for the wraparound. Then you have the two power play goals. And then Panarin is who passed it to Panarin? Was it Lafreniere, I think?
Yes, because Laf had another assist. So even though Laf has not scored in five games, he has five assists.
Yeah, so that goal by Panarin where he goes seven hole, as Steve Ellicott mentioned on the pregame, I don't know if he was aiming for that, but it worked. And then you look at Carolina, they scored three goals. That first goal was the weirdest bounce I've seen
in off in, loft, in, bouncing in, and in going decades, top shelf.
In decades. The third goal with the goalie pulled was very messy, very sloppy. Yeah, those goals still count. Like, not taking anything away.
Right. And Stephen, in fairness, though, that was, and I said this watching the game, that was the most Carolina-like goal of the game.
Yeah.
Because that
yeah.
was because they were swarming and building mm-hmm. and shooting and getting it back. And that's how yeah. they score, right? Something crazy happens in front of the net.
Yeah, but the second goal by, I think, Natchez, there was a defensive left by Adam Fox, who probably was the only Ranger that had a bad game tonight.
Right, and we can speculate, never a good thing to do.
Yeah.
But again, Panarin did miss the first two practices. He
Fox
something
missed the first two practices.
Excuse me, Fox missed the yeah. first two practices. Something happened to his knee on the hit with Jensen. We'll never know. We don't know if he's 100% or 50%. But mm-hmm. probably it's a good idea to keep an eye out on Fox as we head into game two.
What really stood out to me was the Rangers were under pressure in the second period. They were under pressure for certain stints in the third period. They scored. They made it 3-2, and then Panarin gets one back, and that really took the wind out of their sails. That mm-hmm. that really neutralized them as a team because it felt like they were out of ideas. And they couldn't create anything until they pulled the goalie in the final 3 minutes.
Yep.
The Rangers kept them very perimeter for large chunks of this game. Yep. Very yep. few chances to the inside. Only a defensive lapse allowed mm-hmm. Mason to get that.
And that's why
get
if they win, if they win the possession battle and that happens, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
And also the stick work in the neutral zone by especially Zibanejad to break up certain plays and to just disrupt what they were trying to do. That was beautiful.
And this is why Mika Jack frustrated Ranger fans so much this season, because Ranger fans who watch the game closely know what an elite talent Mika can be. And somehow he had this pedestrian year. He was never impactful. He was never dynamic. He had his moments. I'm exaggerating to make a point. But now he's looked like the player in these playoffs. He has, in five games, he has 3 goals and 7 assists. He has 10 points, leading the NHL in scoring for the postseason with Connor McDavid. And the guy looks like a true number one center.
Yep.
He was a game breaker. He was a game changer. He was a superstar out there. That's the Mika Zibanejad we've grown to know and love. If we get that guy for the next, you know, however many games, this will... Yep. be a good playoffs for the New York Rangers. And like I said in the season preview or in the series preview, the centers would make the difference in this series. And Mika and Trocheck both have outstanding games tonight and were the difference makers tonight.
Yeah. The only player in the league, by the way, that has more points than Mika Zibanejad right now is Connor McDavid, who also
McDavid
played
is ahead
five
of
games.
Him. How many points does he have, Stephen?
Connor McDavid has 12.
To Mika's 10.
Yeah, Leon Draisaitl, Mika Zibanejad are tied with 10 in five games.
So Mika's off to a spectacular start. Yeah, and the other thing...
And the other center, let's not forget about him. Trocheck has 8 points.
Yep. 4 goals, 4 assists.
Leads the goal with 4 goals. He had his 4th assist tonight as well. Today, because it was an afternoon game. But for me, it was a night game.
It's always a night game for you, Stephen.
So, yeah, 9 p.m. was the puck drop for me here in Dublin. The two centers were phenomenal tonight. Sorry, today.
Yes, we are recording this in the early morning hours for Stephen in Dublin, but it's the playoffs. That's why Stephen is giving the extra effort here.
Yeah.
And the other guy we have to just mention, because now this narrative is slowly melting away of what is Artemi Panarin going to do in the playoffs? Well, I'll tell you what he's going to do. He's going to score 3 goals in the first 5 games. And that, by the way, is exactly the pace he scored during the season, where he scored 49 goals in 82 games. It's about three goals every five games. And he's looked like Artemi Panarin.
And Jeff, all three were game-winning goals.
Game winners, yes. I was about to say that.
He is the 9th player in NHL history to score at least 3 game-winning goals in his team's first 5 games to start the postseason.
Wow. Right. He's been there. He's been very he's taken advantage of his opportunities. He's been
Which
dynamic.
Is right. Yes.
He's gotten opportunities, but those 2-on-1s that he's converted 2 of his goals on, just him being a superstar, just when you get that kind of chance, just don't miss, and he hasn't.
Yeah. No, he's been great. And again, for game one, it really stayed true to form. This is the kind of game the Rangers want to play against Carolina. They want to, as Jack was referring to, they want to impose their will, impose some physicality on Carolina, take advantage of power play opportunities. We haven't mentioned the Rangers' penalty killing, which was spectacular again.
Are we going to get into officiating? Because, oh boy, Carolina got six penalties, and I don't know how hard some of those calls were, but, you know, the power plays this game were 6-2. The Rangers scored on both of theirs, and Carolina couldn't get one on any of theirs. So that's, as everybody knew coming into the series, it would be special teams would be a huge factor. As we talked about, as everybody in the league has been talking about, it was the number two power play versus the number three power play and the number one penalty kill versus the number three penalty kill. And the Rangers didn't make it look that close tonight.
No. And Stephen, one thing you mentioned in the series preview was Freddie Anderson, which I sort of what you said was he played well, but did he play well? And I kind of have that same feeling after game one. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played okay. Yeah. I don't think he was stealing goals from the Rangers. When the Rangers had opportunities, it felt like they scored.
Yeah, if you look at the first round against the Islanders, on paper, he had a good series. His save percentage was looking good. But if Anderson made the saves a goalie should make. Mm-hmm. But the goals he gave up were bad goals. And tonight he did not make saves that could have won his team the game.
Right. He didn't make the big saves. It wasn't that the Rangers' goals were soft.
Yeah.
He kind of had a good look at the Panarin shot, but it was a 2-on-1. But he didn't. I don't remember one instance where it was, oh, he stopped that, amazing.
Yeah.
Right. I don't remember that happening.
Which is so uncommon for us Ranger fans, because that's what usually happens.
Yes.
When our team plays. But against the Islanders, he gave up some bad goals, some questionable goals. He didn't give up bad goals tonight, but he also didn't make the big save, as you said. And look, kudos to the Rangers on offense for, you know, capitalizing. And Artemi Panarin getting a goal was well deserved, because he played another good game, even though he didn't get on the score sheet before that goal. Those two power play goals, especially the first one, do not happen without Panarin. That first one where Trocheck wins the faceoff, the puck goes near the board. He jumps over a player, Panarin does, and gets to the puck first to play it back to Fox. That's how they set up. And if there was one player who deserved to score that fourth goal, it was Artemi Panarin.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't wait to see the adjustments both coaches make in game two. Because at points during the game, the Rangers' breakouts were effortless. They were spotlit. They were clean. They were efficient. They got moving. And then later in the game, you know, Carolina kind of got in the way of some of those. Early in the game, the Rangers were hemming Carolina in their own zone. They were like, their back check within the zone when Carolina was trying to break out was spotless, like stick lifts and stick positioning, creating turnovers. That's one of them where Mika had a complete one-on-one with the goalie and decided to pass it back. We won't mention that because he had a good game everywhere else. But yeah, I'm so curious to see how both teams handle game two, because
this tonight's game was where you see why the Carolina Hurricanes struggle on the road. When they come up against a good coach who can utilize the last change, who knows how to get the matchups out there that benefit you, the Carolina Hurricanes struggle. Because the Carolina Hurricanes, like, no disrespect to their players, but they're a great team, but they don't have great players. They have really good players. They don't have great players. They're a team that plays like a system. I said this during our series preview.
They're the most system team, I think, in the NHL.
And that is all Rod Brind'Amour. And that works really well at home, because you get the last change, you know, you get the benefit on the face-off dot, so you get to really impact the game as a coach. But on the road, you don't really have that. And in the last 5 years, the results kind of show that too, because in the 22 road games they've played in playoffs over the last 5 years, they've only won 7. They've lost 15, including tonight. So game two is going to be a challenge for Brind'Amour, and they have to take at least one game at MSG if they want to get out of this series with, you know, advancing to the conference final. It's not going to be easy for them. And Laviolette has had an answer for everything Brind'Amour threw at him tonight. And
absolutely,
what you see with Carolina is, especially after that Panarin goal, when that system doesn't work, when that system doesn't get them the goals that they want, they don't really have a plan B. They don't really have another tactic to fall back on.
No, the only thing they try to do a little bit now, Jack, is they are better on the rush than they used to. And there were those moments in the second period where the game really opened up. And it happened to be, interestingly, just before Laviolette gave his in-game interview, and he talked about tightening it up, because that is the one thing that's makes this Carolina team a little different than the last few years, is they're much better off the rush. And I think they wound up being one of the better teams scoring off the rush in the entire NHL the last half of the season.
Absolutely. One of the things they've really transformed while on the rush is getting that east-west pass across. That used to be something that was just not a part of their game. And this year, it helped them take that next step. And why they're such good betting favorites is because they added the element of the east-west pass into their game. They can make that pass if they're given the opportunity, but the Rangers really didn't give them that opportunity tonight or this afternoon. And that was one of the bigger things, is that they were kept to the outside. It was like something 40-something shot attempts and only 12 got to the goal. It was either they were blocked or tipped or went wide. That's I don't even know how you explain that. The Rangers just didn't give them much. And by the way, the second goal on the breakaway was fanned on. He fanned on it and it went five hole. Like, Igor's ready for that shot to go glove side, and he completely fanned on it. Like, what happens if he doesn't fan on? Igor makes a save. It's not even a close game. Yeah.
But yeah, look, that said, game two is not going to be easy at all.
No. This whole series isn't going to be easy. No, we knew that.
This Hurricanes team has a lot left in the tank. They're going to come up with a game plan for game two on, was Tuesday? Yeah, they play Tuesday. And the coaching staff behind the Rangers bench has to come up with something to counter that, but I think they can. And when the individual brilliance of guys like Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin and Vincent Trocheck is adding to the game plan that Laviolette has, that's when you win games against teams like this. So, overall, just a really solid performance by this team.
And one line I wanted to mention, even though they didn't show up on the score sheet, is the Wenberg, Kako, Cooley line played very well.
Yep.
They were I haven't seen the numbers yet, but they seem to have the most possession and zone time of any of the lines during 5-on-5. Cooley was incredibly aggressive. Even Kako threw some checks. Wenberg did a beautiful job kind of controlling the play and being very defensively sound and working on the cycle also in the offensive zone. So that line seems to be getting better and better, which is another great sign for the Rangers. And one thing also is again the first line, right? Chris Kreider, we've given Mika his flowers, but Chris Kreider is playing a more engaged game than he played during the regular season. And Jack Roslovic makes a beautiful play on the first goal of the series to Mika. So if you've got that line cooking with the Trocheck line, with the third line, the Rangers have three lines that can really generate offense now.
Did the Rangers get the right guy at the deadline now in Jack Roslovic with the way he's playing?
Right, exactly.
You know, in the first round, he had some nice points. He had two goals. One of them was an empty netter on the power play. But the way he set up that first goal tonight, man, that's what Jack Roslovic does.
Right,
that's
his speed. Yep, that's his speed.
He used his speed, and I love how he was faking a wraparound to fool everyone and then set up Mika in the slot.
He fooled Teravainen with that, which left Mika alone in the slot. So we're deep into this podcast, and the one guy we haven't mentioned yet is Matt Rempe. And Mr. Rempe can now be proud that the Rangers have a record of 19-2-1 with him in the lineup. He played 7 minutes and 6 seconds, though that's actually skewed because of his 1:44 shift at the end of the first period where he got a little trapped on the ice. But this also feels like what we expected is Rempe's not going to play a lot of minutes, but he was noticeable. He threw his body around. He's that physical presence that I think makes everybody play a little tougher on the Rangers. The penalty he was called on for goalie interference. Yes, he got pushed into the goal, but I maintain that a more veteran player would have taken the outside route first and try to spin off Staal rather than trying to squeeze between Staal and Anderson, which led to Staal giving him the little push, which was which created the so-called goalie interference. But guys, it's not even worth discussing the lineup anymore as far as possibilities, unless somebody got hurt that we don't know about. Game two is going to be the same lineup, and Matt Rempe's going to play again. There's no possibility otherwise.
You know, he really rounds out that bottom six, because as we said, you don't think this team would play differently physically wise without Rempe in the lineup. You know, they all play a couple inches bigger, a couple pounds heavier, a little stronger, a little more aggressive. He just adds that. That's something, you know, the analytics saying this series is 66-33 or whatever, 66-34, whatever the exact numbers the Athletic had. It doesn't equate for Matt Rempe making this team play bigger, stronger, faster, more confident, you know. And to get back to the point about the deadline acquisitions, you know, this team isn't a superstar away. It's depth away. And that's what they got. They got the depth they needed. They got the third line center who can play a responsible game. And they got a guy with some speed and some skill that can complement Mika and Kreider's game. They got what they needed. The defensive pairs shifted out beautifully. They have Igor playing at full bore. And they have top two centers as good as this organization has ever had. That's yes. That's all you can ask for.
And look, if Rempe is not playing, then someone else has to. And if the Rangers are not comfortable playing Philip Hedl yet, then the only other guy that could realistically play is Johnny Brodzinski. And no disrespect to Johnny Brodzinski, but what does he bring that the team doesn't already have?
Right. No, exactly. We said this in the season, in the series preview. If the Rangers are playing Brodzinski on the fourth line, as a unit, they may play a few more minutes together, but he's not going to impose his will physically on the ice. You would hope they just create some zone time and work hard on the forecheck. But Rempe is such a unique player. That's the difference. I mean, Brzezinski's a hockey player. Rempe's something different, right? The other guy is Hedl, which again becomes this. He's now really the secret weapon if the Rangers need him somewhere down the line of the playoffs if somebody has to miss a game. He's probably the first guy in now. When we've been saying it's Brzezinski, I think my guess is, I don't know how you guys feel, if somebody tweaks something and has to miss a game, Rempe's not coming out of the lineup and Brzezinski's not going into the lineup. It's Hedl going in for that player.
Absolutely.
Who tweaked something.
Absolutely. They have a dog in Philip Hedl who had his best hockey ever last 2 years ago against Carolina in the playoffs, who's ready to go. He's locked and loaded. If they need him, if someone gets a tweak, if anybody in the top six or even the top nine has an issue, you have Hedl to slot in. And that's something that a lot of teams don't have aren't privy to that kind of privilege. I have a thought experiment for the both of you real quick. Let's say theoretical, it's at the end of the year, somehow Arizona gets their ownership back, but they just lost their roster to Utah, right? And we're having another expansion draft. And the two players the Rangers have to expose are Rempe and Brodzinski. Who do you think they're picking?
Right.
Who does a team, do you think they're picking out of those two?
Right. Well, for multiple reasons, Rempe, because you also get him younger with RFA years left. But if they were the same age, if they had the same contract situation, do you go for Rempe? Because Brzezinski is the type of player you can pick up off waivers, with all due respect.
Brzezinski had big moments for this team. He stepped up when they needed him, when they lost a few guys, when they were down Kako and Hedl. He played huge minutes, and I'm sure if they needed to call upon him in this series, he'd do great. But the effect
Rempe. Right, because Brzezinski, and this is going to be forgotten if they make a deep run, he was the third line center basically from Hedl's injury in early November until the Wenberg trade. And the Rangers maintained the division lead and basically about the best record overall. So he certainly deserves credit for that. But Rempe is the difference maker. Hedl is the secret weapon. If anybody in the top nine goes down, Hedl goes in. If somebody on the bottom gets hurt, right, if somebody on the fourth line gets hurt, that's where you may. That's an interesting decision there. Do you Do you bring Cooley down to the fourth line and put Hedl up on the third line? And they may do that even to get Hedl in the lineup first if there's any kind of an injury. But it's now this crazy luxury the Rangers have that they've got a guy who they've been working hard in practice. And now it really doesn't matter, Steven, that he hasn't played for so long. Meaning, I should say, rephrase that. It doesn't matter now that he's taking some more time to come back because he's been out for so long anyway. Another week or so doesn't matter.
It doesn't. And as long as the Rangers keep winning, can you really justify taking someone out of the lineup? I said this in a previous recording too. Unless the player that's coming back into the lineup is like Zibanejad or Panarin caliber. Let's say Panarin is the guy on LTIR. The moment he's healthy, yeah, you got to put him back in the lineup. But the Rangers have now won 5 in a row. They
won 5 in a row, and they've only played, what is it now, Stephen, 5 games in about 3 weeks because of a week off before the playoffs and a week off now after the first round.
Going into game 2 on Tuesday, they will have played only 5 games in 22 days.
Right. And as far as travel goes, they got back from Detroit on April the 5th. And other than a easy trip to Washington, play 2 games and come home after the series ended, we now know, because at least the days of the series have been set, the Rangers play home on Tuesday, and then game 3, the first game in Carolina, is Thursday. So on the Wednesday the 8th, that's when the Rangers are going to take a plane trip down to Carolina, which means they have been home, again, other than a nothing trip to Washington, for over a month. Yeah. When you look at some of the other traveling that teams in some of the other,
maybe that is why Zibanejad looks so good, because he was able to sleep in his own bed for so long. And, you know, that's, you get into a certain routine, and maybe that's what some of the players needed.
Adds up.
The Rangers have 5 point per game players so far in the playoffs.
Laf, Mika, Trocheck. Kreider.
Yeah.
And the last one, Laf, Mika. Panarin?
Panarin has 4 points.
Panarin has 4 and 5.
I didn't want to say Fox. Is it Fox?
No.
Ooh. Wait, who's this?
It's Jack Roslovic.
Oh, stud. Because he got another point today. And I guess, and he had goals. He had, like, what was he, 3 points in the first 4 games?
He has two goals and three assists.
So stud. Yeah, he was not back, boys. We're getting Jack Roslovic.
All right. Wow. So again, our schedule is, we'll be back after each playoff game. The next playoff game, again, is Tuesday night. So sometime New York time anyway, mid to later in the afternoon, Wednesday is when the new podcast after game 2 will drop. So guys, as the Rangers head into game 2, I'm assuming tomorrow will be an optional practice with meetings. Some of the guys who haven't played, including Hedl, will get hard skates. The rest of the team, most of them, I'm assuming, will stay off the ice tomorrow. But any final thoughts or things to look for as we look now to game 2 on Tuesday night at the Garden, Jack?
Oof. This will be, it won't be easy. I still stand by my, it will be Rangers in 5. Rangers is going to win at home tomorrow. They're going to lose game 3. They're going to win game 4 in Rochester, game 4 in Raleigh, and game 5 at home. They'll come back and win game 5 at home. These will be all really tough games. They'll be really close. They'll be competitive. But I think the Rangers, everything we've talked about there, they have the edge in the special teams. Even though it was close in the regular season, they're still better. Igor's better. Their top six is, their skilled players are better. And I think it'll really boil down to that. And now that they have the coaching and the system to back up the star power, I think the Rangers will handle business. The adjustments by, I know I'm going on for a little bit, but the adjustments by Brind'Amour will be very, very interesting. Let's see if they can hem the Rangers in for a little bit longer and take bigger chunks out of them. But I still think the Rangers will be able to handle this. And I think Rangers will find a way to win game 2 as well.
Steven?
Yeah. Game 4 is going to be on Saturday. So I expect a lot of Ranger fans to travel to North Carolina for that game.
Yes. We should say that the series is every other day, Stephen, except game five is Monday and game six is Thursday. So that's the only time there's the extra day off.
Yeah. So Saturday, game four, I expect that arena to be blue. But yeah, game two on Tuesday, then game three on Thursday. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see what Carolina comes up with. But I'm confident in this coaching staff and in the way the players execute the plan the coaching staff has, that they can answer whatever Carolina throws at them. And if you look at tonight too, you know, they won 4-3, but it didn't feel as close as 4-3. And right. Carolina played a good game. Let's not forget that they played a good game. They didn't deserve to lose by two goals either. It's one of those weird games where 4-2 feels too lopsided in favor of the Rangers. But 4-3 is not how close the game was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'll tell you another thing in looking at these games. It feels like these are the games the Rangers are going to win, where I could see a game where everything goes right for Carolina and they win 5-1. That I can kind of see for them when they finally get a game where everything goes right. And if it doesn't, the Rangers are going to win the series in a short series. But who knows?
Maybe that's game.
It's all speculation.
Maybe that's game three. Maybe that's game three in Carolina. I think, like we said, it's crazy to think, you know, the Rangers have been in this position three series in a row. And they've lost two of them. Or four series in a row now. Four series in a row, and they've lost two of them. They lost against the Devils when they were up 1-0. They lost against Tampa when they were up 1-0. They won against the Capitals. So the series is obviously still way...
Yeah, right. And I had to tell myself, Jack, I had to tell myself that when the Rangers had the run in 2022, they were obviously down 3-1 against Pittsburgh. They came back to win. So game one against Carolina felt like you could finally breathe again and it wasn't the end of the world. And then in that series, they're down 2-0. They're down 3-2. They win in game seven. Game one in Tampa, it felt like you could breathe again and it wasn't the end of the world. Because the first series against Washington was such a laugher in many respects. This felt like, oh my God, it's the most important game the Rangers are playing, but it was only game one.
This was the first game of the playoffs for me. I didn't feel this way at any point during the Capitals series, especially because how the penalties were called so early on in game one against the Capitals. You never really got the full excitement out. The intensity wasn't there. The speed wasn't there, but in this game there was. And this was really for the Rangers. This was game one of the playoffs. They played 86 regular season games. This was game one, and they showed out. They were rested. They were prepared. They executed. That's all you can ask for.
Regular season's finally over.
All right. Regular season's finally over. Game one is finally over of round two. Rangers up 1-0. Game two again is Tuesday. We'll be back on Wednesday to recap that game. So thanks, everybody, for listening. This will hopefully be a fun Rangers run. Jack?
Sorry, one last thing. Like we said, the man-on-man might kill Carolina, and it did kill Carolina being overly aggressive on the penalty kill that allowed the Rangers to get that second goal. What will Rod Brind'Amour and Carolina do? Will they go away from their system, or will they make adjustments within? How will they be able to manage the Rangers taking advantage of that? Now
All right,
you can continue.
Thanks again for listening, everybody. For Jack Filippi and Stat Boy Steven, I'm Jeff Filippi. Thanks for listening to Under Review, the special playoff edition, and we'll be back after game two.